Coming up on Tech News Today, dear heavens, the iPad announcement has finally been announced. But that won't stop people from spreading rumors. Also, why Google Plus is a ghost town, or is it? And Cisco wants to save the wireless internet. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, February 28th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Ford, featuring the EcoBoost engine with turbocharger and direct injection. Look for EcoBoost on the 2012 Ford Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, and at Ford.com/technology. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we take the tech news of the day, we bring it to a nice, comfy chair, and sit it down and say, tell us everything you know.
Seriously, spill the beans.
It's a recliner, so it's not like we're being rude about
it. It's like a lazy boy.
Yeah.
We give it popcorn.
Yeah.
And then usually they comply. That's the fun part of that.
Exactly.
Because we're nice to them.
For instance, this morning I said, look, CNBC has this crazy rumor that Apple's going to make their announcement of the iPad in New York. What's up with that, Tech News?
New York City.
Tech News said, get a rope. Then they said, actually, Apple's sending out their invites right now. It'll not be in New York City. It'll be at the Yerba Buena Center in San Francisco at 10 a.m. March 7th, just like the rumors said. And the announcement is not very subtle this time. There's not a lot of parsing to be done. If you can scroll up on that, Jason, it's essentially a picture of an iPad. So
yeah, a picture of someone.
Oh, it's not loading.
You know what? It's right there. It's not loading.
If you could just,
that's weird.
Wow, that is weird.
That's, if that was the invite, that'd be very subtle. What exactly
does it mean? Something's wrong with our browser and the video version.
They almost should have done that.
What it actually says is we have something you really have to see, period, and touch, period.
So I guess the parsing could be the C is an Apple TV.
Well, you know, it's interesting. 95Mac says they have sources who tell them that there will be a new Apple TV launching alongside this next generation iPad. Now, whether that's just another add-on or a large television, it isn't going to be a large television, but we don't exactly know what it is yet. But it's possible that the iPad isn't the only thing that's going to be announced a week from tomorrow.
I kind of think it will be, but stranger things have happened. Maybe there's going to be some sort of iPad integration.
You think it's iPad only?
I think it's iPad only. I mean, it's a picture of an iPad with icons.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's
it.
All right.
With Keynote and the Maps icon. We have something you really have to see and touch.
Well, the C definitely sounds like if it's just the iPad alone, that means that Retina display is a lock.
Because yeah, right.
That's something that's been rumored for such a long time that should be at the iPad at this point. And so at least it looks like next week we'll see it.
Well, not only that, but quad-core LTE, also a lock?
I think LTE is not a lock, but a likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about quad-core or not. I think it might still be dual-core, but it'll definitely, in my opinion, have LTE. I am 83% certain.
Well, I, for one, hope that there's all sorts of things that they're announcing, because we're going to get up early and talk about it live at Twit.
That's right.
But I see what you mean. If the iPad 3 has the more impressive specs that have been thrown around, that's all that they're going
to
talk about.
In the graphics, parse a little bit more. There doesn't appear to be a home button underneath the icon. Now, maybe it's the landscape version.
Well,
but
the
maybe
home button's probably under his thumb or something.
Or is it? That's the thing. Maybe there was always those patents where Apple was going to remove
the landscape.
That home button.
That is interesting.
Yeah,
maybe this is the bezel of a TV.
Honestly, I don't even really care if it's the home button is gone or not.
Well, Tom, you're in the minority. Apple people would care.
You can't hold it wrong anymore.
I don't care if there are 20 buttons or zero.
Well, I've used the BlackBerry Playbook. Doesn't have a home button. Works fine.
Yeah.
You don't need a home button.
It would change a lot of things for the OS, though. That's almost more of like a 5.1 type thing.
I guess. Doesn't
it? Just a silly idea.
There's also The Guardian reporting that Apple's working on a new audio file format that will offer adaptive streaming so that all of your iCloud music would be high def. HD, in other words, just high quality AACs.
So that would work. Would you have to do anything? Was that
actually
iTunes
it wouldn't be AAC? It's some newer format that's like high quality, and they would ask people to remaster their music for the iTunes store.
So the idea would be that if you did iTunes Match and you already had a track, you would now, if you were still using iTunes Match, you'd be able to have access to a higher quality version of that.
It's adaptive too, right? So if you've got a high enough bandwidth, it'll give you the highest definition version of it. And if you don't, then it will give you a lower quality version of it. But yeah, your music in the cloud, whatever the version that you can handle is.
It'd be interesting if your cloud version of your music can be upgraded from time to time. You're like, you know what? Yeah, remastered one. I want the higher quality one. Although, if you like bootlegs and certain music that the recording quality is low in the first place, you might not want to get those things remastered.
And this is a great fight against piracy, right? Which is, hey, go pirate all you want, but you're not getting this adaptive streaming high quality version because we're not making that one available for download, at least for a while. So I think that's the right way to play the anti-piracy game, not DRM, but higher quality versions that pirates have to keep chasing to adapt and put up. They will find a way, but in the meantime, it'll be a lot easier to just pay Apple the $25 a year to get it. So why would you bother pirating it? Unless they charge you extra to get the high adaptive version of it. Still at Mobile World Congress, Google's Eric Schmidt had his keynote. He said a lot of things. Nothing was too crazy, but we'll still call it Schmidt, my chairman says. I like what he said about mesh networking. He was talking about censorship. He was saying that internet censorship could create a digital caste system. He expressed some worries about the SOPA fight in the United States. Talked about how many countries are, I think it was 23-some countries blocking Google right now. And he said that mesh networks, peer-to-peer connections, linking mobile phones to each other without central internet access points will make information leak faster, meaning that censorship can't stop the signal.
I like what he said about the price of phones. He says next year's $100 phone is this year's $400 phone. Okay, I can think of a few Android phones that fit into that range. When you get to the $70 point, you get to a huge new market, says Schmidt, especially because those phones are resold used for $20 or $30. I can't imagine some of these phones being so cheap, but...
The quote I was looking at was, I always like television stuff. So, at the speeds we're moving, the distinctions between television, radio, DVD, and high-definition video just disappear. It's all just bits. And he was talking in reference to their Kansas City 1 gigabit network. And to me, that's really where this should be going in the first place with television and video, because I don't really care about a set-top box or whatever. If I have an internet connection, it'd be great to be able to access all that stuff via that anyway. There's no real reason why it has to be split up with, this is on a coax cable and this is on this. It's on fiber, so it doesn't make a difference. So I hope that really is the future.
Jason, you got anything Schmidt was saying today that caught your ear?
So he was talking about, or they were showing rather, Chrome, Chrome for Android. And he says, if you don't like speed or security, it's free. Is that Schmidt just being his normal snarky self? I'm saying, well, if you don't like cool things like speed or like security, then it's free, so whatever.
I had to read that three times.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that one out.
I thought he had said that Chrome wasn't secure. Or
I know,
speed. Yeah,
it was exactly. Badly phrased. Maybe it sounded better than it read.
Right.
Because it did sound like he was slamming his own product. But he was saying, well, if speed and security aren't enough for you, hey, it's free.
That's what I mean. Yeah. In the typical kind of Schmidt snarky sort of way.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Also, something that Eric Schmidt didn't say, Hiroshi Lockheimer, vice president of engineering for mobile at Google, told reporters that Android 5.0, here's what he said. Here's the quote. In general, the Android release cadence is one major release a year with some maintenance releases that are substantial still. Everybody started reporting this as if he confirmed Android 5.0 coming out this year. He didn't say anything different than what Andy Rubin has said before and Google has said before, that they're going to go to one big release a year. And so why suddenly did this get all the headlines?
Because it's a good headline.
Yeah.
Flat out, it's
a sensational way to rephrase what the quote was.
Android, 5.0 coming out this year. It's like, great, now we have confirmation because we had confirmation before.
But he didn't say that. All he said was the cadence is one big release a year.
That's right.
And Rubin has said that before, and it didn't get this crazy headline. Sorry.
Well, it's the... You know, he may not have specifically said Jelly Bean is coming out this year, but he says one major release this year. There hasn't been a major release this year yet. Therefore, it could be assumed that the next major release will be Jelly Bean. It'll happen by the end of the year.
Right?
I know. It's kind of silly. Yeah. It's kind of like when, you know, every year, I don't know about when it is, October-ish, we start to hear rumors of the iPad announcement or whatever, and how they're saying there will indeed be an iPad refresh next year, you know, in March or April.
Right.
And it's like, you always know that, but somebody has to report it once there's a little bit of inkling. It's like they all have to get there first, you know?
Safe link bait. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, totally.
So, you're still credible. It's just kind of already known.
Right.
Meanwhile, Google under, well, not attack, but ComScore has some less flattering numbers for Google Plus.
Yes. For anybody who wonders, how is Google Plus actually doing? They had such a crazy meteoric rise as far as user accounts when they launched last year. ComScore study showed that Google Plus users spent an average of 5.1 minutes in November using Google Plus, and it actually fell over the next couple of months, 4.8 minutes in December, down to 3.3 minutes in January. What does that mean? Well, if you compare it to Facebook, their users spent 6 to 7 hours per month on the site over the 3 months. Now, Facebook has retention periods that are far and above any other social network. However, a network like MySpace, which has, I think, about 27 million fewer users on the record than Google Plus does, have people who, once they are on MySpace, end up staying a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. Now, so what does this mean? PC users only were counted for this. Mobile users aren't included. However, Facebook also has a lot of mobile users, so I'm not sure that the numbers would be so different even if those mobile users were counted in the study. Google spokesperson said ComScore's data is dramatically lower than Google's internal data. They're counting things differently. They also say, listen, Google thinks about the service not as a site. We're not a site the way Facebook is. It's a deepening of a relationship to billions of existing users who are already committed to Google's services like search.
They're looking
like YouTube,
deeply into your eyes.
Like Android. So by this measure, our engagement is through the roof because Google Plus is just one part of the Google experience. Okay, well, there are some companies who are speaking out in favor of this whole idea that Google Plus engagement is not through the roof at all. Zynga CEO told the Wall Street Journal, who had also quoted this ComScore study, that usage has been slow on the uptick, was their quote, at Google Plus. Zynga offers Cityville and Zynga Poker as Google Plus games, so they have that to compare to Facebook. Intel also has a brand account. Brand accounts were offered well after personal accounts were, but they've had some time to build up. They say they have 350,000 users. Brand engagement is not what they'd hoped. Then again, on the flip side, on Facebook, they've got 9 million fans and thousands of comments. So they're comparing the two. I do think that it is unfair to compare Google Plus to Facebook. They are not... They're perhaps rivals, but they don't give you the same experience.
They're not, and Google argues they're not trying to.
Google, well, okay. Facebook has also had a lot more time to make their experience something that users would want and users don't want to leave for the most part. So there's a little bit of the unfair advantage on Facebook's part. But I tend to think that Google Plus users signed up maybe once or twice. Now, I'm not talking about everybody, but in general, some of those crazy huge numbers and just never went back.
I think what Google Plus was doing good when they started, and some of this was even before they left beta, right, before they went public, mm-hmm. Was they would roll out new features that made you get excited about Google Plus again. So as maybe your interest started to wane in Google Plus, they'd add games or right. They would add Hangouts or, they would, I guess they had Hangouts in the beginning, but they made Hangouts work better. I just remember people getting excited at regular intervals. Oh, something new's been added to Google Plus. I'm going to go back there and check it out. That hasn't happened in a while. And now they're falling back on this idea of like, well, Google Plus is an integrated solution throughout all the Google projects. We're not really pushing it as a social network. I think that may be a mistake that has been made a lot in the past and never worked out. If you look at Yahoo's strategy, that was what they said for their social network. That's what AOL was saying when they talked about social networks. We're trying to permeate it through all of our offerings. That's too diffuse. It doesn't work. It may work as a not social network thing, as a way to say, oh, these are plus ones and these are ways to connect with people in your address book, but it's not going to get the same kind of long-term usage that Facebook gets, those hours per month. You're going to only get minutes per month if you're just a tool that you use in certain situations.
Yeah, I think that's what you're saying is pretty spot on, Tom. But I think what Google's saying isn't that crazy considering, if I'm in Gmail, right, I can see a notification that six of my friends have said something. I can click right there and I'll see it in the bar. So you're not necessarily going to Google Plus to see what's going on versus Facebook, which is a little bit more sticky where you're like, oh, this is going on. I'm at the site. Now I can go through it and get lost like in a rabbit hole, kind of like a Wikipedia kind of experience where you just lose the entire day that way. Google Plus, it's slowly in everything. I mean, the personalized search results, I'm starting to see those. Like, all your friends have said this this search result for you if you're looking for something. Or for YouTube, that's being a bit influenced by Google+. And some of my friends are still using Plus to the point where, you know, there's still stuff going on in the stream, but it doesn't look anything like Facebook, where people are posting regularly by any means. But
I, you know, Google Plus does not look like a ghost town to me at all.
No,
me neither. I look at Google Plus and I see a lot of people using it still. But I will say that, you know, I used to post when Tech News Today was starting and I would get 20 to 60 comments. Now I get like 5 or 7.
Mm-hmm. So I've had the same experience.
The usage has definitely decreased. That doesn't mean it's disappeared. But it has consolidated, if you want to put it nicely.
I have a hard time not comparing Google Plus to Friend Feed. Anybody who uses Friend Feed knows that Google Plus in many ways has some of the great features that Friend Feed used to have. This is what happened with Friend Feed, though. There was a lot of, hey, I'm still on it, and I've still got some friends on it. You know, it doesn't have to be like a Facebook, or Facebook ended up buying Friend Feed, so that's sort of ironic. But and eventually, Friend Feed usage dwindled down to that. You know, there'd be just a couple people posting or liking my stuff, and so it did turn into a ghost town. Took a while. I just would hate to see Google Plus go in the same way.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Ford. We really appreciate having Ford on the show. And this episode is brought to you by Ford, featuring EcoBoost. EcoBoost is the engine technology from Ford that delivers the power of one of those big gas guzzling engines without the gas guzzling. The smaller EcoBoost engine has helped make the 7-passenger Ford Explorer. Now, you think of that as like, oh my gosh, that thing must burn fuel like crazy. Best-in-class highway fuel economy. Here's how Ford did it. They redesigned the conventional engine to meet fuel efficiency standards, created EcoBoost engine technology by reducing the number of cylinders so they could improve efficiency, but then compensating for the loss in horsepower and torque through a combination of technologies, one, direct injection, and twin turbocharging. Direct injection produces a cooler, denser charge that generates more power per drop of fuel, so you don't have to use as much fuel, while the two small-engine-cooled turbochargers spool up more quickly than a single large turbo. Energy from the engine's exhaust is actually captured to move those turbine wheels, so you're using every piece of energy you can milk out of that engine. Your experience is instantaneous low-end torque responsiveness with virtually no turbo lag. Look for the 2.0-liter EcoBoost engine on the 2012 Explorer and Edge, the 2013 Escape, which is coming in the spring this year. That one's going to offer 1.6-liter and 2.0-liter EcoBoost options. And you can learn more about these and other technologies. Ford's bringing lots of technologies to the car. Check them out. Ford.com/technology. Now we must cover the patent wars. Yahoo is seeking to force Facebook into licensing somewhere between 10 and 20 patents over technologies that include advertising, personalization of the web, social networking, messaging. This, according to New York Times Deal Book, apparently Yahoo legal head Mike Callahan called Facebook yesterday, according to Kara Swisher at All Things D, asking the company to pay licensing fees or risk facing a lawsuit, and then called the New York Times right away, right after that. Barry Schnitt, a spokesperson for Facebook, said in a statement to the New York Times, "Yahoo contacted us at the same time they called the New York Times, so we haven't had the opportunity to fully evaluate their claims." Apparently, this has been going on for a while. Yahoo and Facebook have sort of lightly been talking about licensing terms, but Yahoo went full force yesterday. Now, Kara Swisher points out, Yahoo has done this before. Actually, a couple of stories pointed this out. They wrangled with Google about patents that they had acquired when Yahoo bought Overture right before Google went public in 2004. They settled that 10 days before the Google IPO, and Yahoo got several million shares of Google stock, which had then sold and turned into cash. Facebook's going to go IPO this spring. I think it's just the same thing over again, don't you?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people calling Yahoo, how sad. It's just a patent troll company now, a shell of itself. Well, it's not as if they haven't done this before. And it's certainly not as if they're the only company who's going after people who they can get money out of because of their patent portfolio, which by many accounts is very strong.
Yeah, Kara Swisher with All Things D was saying it's kind of a Kodak move, because when Kodak had no options left, they decided to try to milk some money out of their patents, and it didn't work. Kodak went bankrupt. I don't think Yahoo is on the verge of bankruptcy here. In fact, it doesn't seem to me like they're in that desperate back-against-the-wall position of we've got to milk money out of our patents. I think they're just looking at a big, valuable Facebook IPO that looks just as juicy as the Google one did in 2004, and they're telling themselves, we should try to get a piece of that. Worked with Google.
According to Yahoo, they have already licensed some of these patents. They haven't said exactly which ones to whom, but to other technology companies. So, you know, Yahoo going after Facebook is big news because it's Facebook and they're about to IPO.
Yeah, right.
But if Yahoo's like, listen, this is kind of par for the course. We've got patents and we want to license the patents that we feel that people are infringing on. It's not that weird.
It cracks me up when people use the word patent troll, the term patent troll, for companies that have other things other than IP. Because Yahoo actually does have services. They have a lot of deals. They have a lot of things that are still going for them. When you have a company like Kodak that declared bankruptcy and the only thing they have left is IP, that's when you start going, yeah, well, maybe that's all you do. But that's not the case with Yahoo. And this, they're still, even though they have a search engine, they're not running it anymore, but they're still running a pretty successful site, and they're running a lot of different content services that are doing quite well. And it seems like a really smart move by Yahoo. Facebook doesn't want to deal with this. They have the SEC breathing down their neck. They want to make sure everything is ready for their IPO, and Yahoo's just pretty much forcing the issue. Look, you want us out of your hair right now? This is how it's going to work. You'll sell us some stock at some low costs right now, and we will.
We're going to make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's how they talk now. Scott Thompson talks.
He was hoarse that day.
He's fighting a cold.
It's okay. We'll get him some cough drops, and he'll be all right.
Mobile World Congress, by the way. You heard of it? It was an entire show yesterday. Another announcement coming out of there. Cisco Service Provider Division Senior Director Murali Namani says Cisco wants wireless devices to seamlessly roam anywhere. Now, that may have put you to sleep the way I just said it, but it's actually pretty darn cool. They announced Next Generation Hotspots, a plan that they will work with ISPs. So in the United States, AT&T or PCCW in Hong Kong, Shaw in Canada, Smart and True in Thailand. And they will allow a software update to their routers that are on the backbone. Anybody who's running an ASR 5000 mobile multimedia platform would then have less gear to buy, and you wouldn't have to touch your phone to switch from Wi-Fi to 3G and back again, or whatever your cellular data is. Just like right now, if your Wi-Fi goes away, you don't have to go log on to your cellular data connection, right? It just automatically switches to mm-hmm. it. What Cisco wants to do is upgrade their own routers so that any Wi-Fi hotspot running what they call Hotspot 2.0 or the next generation hotspot would do the same thing. You wouldn't have to log on. It would just automatically connect. I mean, it's sort of what I have going on at home, right? When I'm at home,
well,
I don't have to log on my own
Wi-Fi.
Network,
yeah. But you had to once.
So they want to make it simpler to say it's not even just about remembering and setting up a password, that this is just automatic. And you don't even have to be an AT&T customer for this to work. I'm not sure how they're going to make that work, but that's what they said.
Now, I think Microsoft's working on technology, something like this for Windows 8, where you'd be able to quickly switch. They were demonstrating this using like a train example, where you would have like a Windows tablet and it would be able to pick up or offload packets to open Wi-Fi spots or 3G, depending on what was nearer at that time. It would mm-hmm. smartly decide what to send when. And this is the same kind of thing that you really need this, because one of the things that Cisco's been talking about, or people talking about with this in general, is when you want to watch a video.
Yeah, or a video phone call.
Any of those things become really, they turn great on Wi-Fi, but when you do that switch over, not so great. The call might drop, or the video might drop entirely. The quality might drop so extensively that it's worthless. So if you can have that seamless experience, especially with the speeds that LTE is actually reaching, it would be nice to see that, oh, good, I can just go from one spot to the next. I don't have to worry about, oh, have I hit accept on this? Is this a man in the middle attack? That's another issue I would think that could be in here. Remember all those things in Starbucks? You see the AT&T Wi-Fi, and you're like, is this AT&T's Wi-Fi? Or is this some guy who's just in my
free public Wi-Fi?
Exactly.
Yeah, that one was fun. What happens if you've got, oh, I don't know, three wireless networks that are all at pretty much the same signal strength? Would it be able to
Cisco's working on a very complicated algorithm here that's going to hand off seamlessly from Wi-Fi to cellular data and back again. That's complex. So they're going to have some algorithm in there for determining what connection it takes.
What if they could pull in from all three and give you like the
and
best connection
it,
in the world?
Like bound modems?
Pipelining.
Yeah. I like that.
Like BitTorrent Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Make it work, Cisco.
Or like the backpack. The live view.
Live view. Exactly.
Now, you're going to have routers from Cisco that are upgraded to the new software. You're going to have software on your phone. They're talking about iPhone and Android to start with. In fact, apparently, Google and Samsung have already put it in some Android phones. So it's already out there for testing. You just got to find Wi-Fi routers that use it. But they are ready to go with this. And remember, the point isn't just like simplifying logging in. The point is seamless use. You will never pay attention to whether you're on Wi-Fi or cellular data if this works the way they want it to work. You'll just stream your video, stream your Pandora, make your phone calls, and it will go back and forth. And it will save the carriers boatloads of money because AT&T's got all these femtocells around. They've got all of these Wi-Fi hotspots in Starbucks everywhere. Mm-hmm. They can use the bandwidth on those to handle internet and not have to clog up their cellular data network all the time. It's intriguing to see if this works and where it goes. I'm kind of excited about it working. I don't know if it's going to work, but Cisco's pretty good at this stuff.
If it doesn't work, it's exactly how it is now. So
yeah, it's just disappointing.
Exactly. You have the choice of buying a Wi-Fi tablet or a Wi-Fi 3G tablet or an LTE tablet.
Finally, Sprint, Clearwire, and LightSquared.
Some more wireless.
The love triangle continues.
Here we go. We got Sprint. They're issuing $2 billion worth of bonds. So if you don't know what bonds are, it's like it's an IOU, and that means they're going to have some debt. So where's that $2 billion bucks going? According to Bloomberg, refinancing. They're going to have some network upgrades because Sprint is moving to LTE and possibly helping out Clearwire since they own pretty much the majority of that company. And Clearwire CEO, he's just doing some talking at Mobile World Congress. He's saying, quote, "Our spectrum is clean. It's contiguous.
It's clean.
It's deep. And it doesn't suffer." This is the quote. "And it doesn't suffer from interference issues." Obviously, a little dig at LightSquared there. Quote, "We believe that with the absence of spectrum available in the U.S., in the foreseeable future, ultimately, we will be best served by serving a lot of wholesale partners." All things D suggested it could be T-Mobile, but Prush wouldn't talk about who Clearwire is currently speaking with. And if you're wondering what's going on with LightSquared, they just lost a CEO.
Oops.
Where'd they put him? Sanjay
Ahuja decided to... Look at the last place you left him.
Well, he decided to leave that last space.
Okay? Oh,
he decided to bail out of the company. The company named not one, but two interim co-chief operating officers.
A rim of them.
Well, not just yet. But they're using... they are promoting Chief Network Officer Doug Smith and CFO Mark Montanger. They will be the co-COOs until a new CEO is found.
The most intriguing part about this story to me is Clearwire indicating that they want to become the wholesaler because LightSquared doesn't look like they're going to survive. The news gets worse every day. My love of the LightSquared idea was the idea of a wholesaler saying, we want to be the dumb pipe and make money off that, which I've been dying for someone to do. They just ran into this horrible spectrum allocation issue. So if Clearwire can do it, I'm all for that too. Problem is Clearwire is like on the verge of going belly up at any moment. That's part of the reason Sprint needs the bond money. I can see Sprint doing this as well. And then of course they're the major owner of Clearwire. So maybe Sprint brings Clearwire back into the house and becomes a wholesaler. But I guess all I care about is that some business out there should take advantage of the opportunity to make boatloads of money providing an open platform that all comers can pay to run their networks on.
I mean, Sprint's already tried their toe in the water with this thing with MVNOs, right? They Boost runs on them, Ting runs on Sprint, I think Virgin runs on Sprint. So there's already a whole bunch of that going on. If Clearwire can get itself financially straight where they basically have no competition in this. I mean, LightSquared was going to be the big dog in this, and if Clearwire can successfully move from WiMAX over to LTE, like, they should be able to do that, by the way. It's not like it's impossible. I think it's just like a firmware upgrade. It's a very odd thing.
It's a software upgrade, and it's not going to be a problem, I don't think.
Because the network itself is there. They just need to do some changes
to it. Cost. Right. They think they have enough cost to get started. But that was the worrying part of that quote. We have enough cost to get started.
Considering, remember all of the announcement that LightSquared has these customers and those customers and those customers signed up? They had signed up like over at least 10, if not more than that. I'm being conservative on that number. Those customers have to go somewhere. They might go over to Clearwire to go, look, you know what? Our company, LightSquared, the one we're working with, it's not really running for us. We need to go with Clearwire, and that would be big money for Sprint as well. So we have some major things going on there, too.
But they're not going to get those people to sign up until they can show that they're not going to go out of business before they upgrade the network to LTE. So it's a little bit of a catch-22 there. But maybe Sprint can provide enough money. But Sprint's got its own problems. They're losing money on the iPhone all the time until that pays off in 3 years. It's a complex situation, but one that we'll keep an eye on for you. On to the news fuse. Hey, you want to hack Chrome? How about Adobe Flash? How about Windows? You want to hack Windows? Of course you want to hack Windows. Drivers? You want to just hack some drivers? Google's going to pay you to do that as long as it affects any web browser. Google is offering up to $1 million of prize money at Pwn to Own. Breakdown is this: $20,000 for hacks in Flash, Windows, or any browser, $40,000 for Chrome-specific bugs, and $60,000 for bugs that affect only Chrome. The Pwn to Own contest begins next week at the CanSec West Conference and is an annual celebration of hackery goodness.
Sony has announced that it sold 1.2 million PS Vitas around the world. The Vita launched back in December in Japan. The European and North American versions arrived this month. Sony didn't bother to disclose which region but how many, but Sony also announced that it sold more than 2 million games for the Vita itself.
Samsung just introduced a web version of its messaging app, ChatOn. Now think of ChatOn as Samsung's BBM or iMessage competitor. According to SammyHub.com, to access the web version, you must first install the ChatOn app on a phone to receive a verification code. Samsung currently offers apps for iOS, Android, and Bata.
ChatOn. Apply directly to the forehead. A quantum computer is still not practical, is probably what the headline should read. But IBM got so damn close. We're all pretty excited. Big Blue announced today that it has created quantum bits, qubits, that can retain their properties for 100 microseconds at a time. That's 2 to 4 times as long as previous records. They also have reduced errors and brought performance near the minimum required to create a practical quantum computer. Why do we want this? Because just with 250 qubits, a quantum computer would contain more bits than there are particles in the universe. IBM is going to present its results at the American Physical Society meeting this week in Boston.
All right, here's the short version. Everybody who knows anything about Google's privacy change is mad at Google because of it. The long version is that French regulatory agency CNIL decided to finally object to Google 3 days before the new policy to combine all privacy policies and all data into one comes into force. The U.S. FTC chairman called the new policy a brutal choice, and YouGov conducted a survey that found 65% of internet users aren't even aware that privacy changes are rolling out this week, which means, boy, they really don't pay attention to anything.
It's on every part of Google.
It's hard to ignore.
What are you guys talking about?
Google's got a new privacy policy change.
I don't know anything about it. I didn't see it 500 times.
You haven't gotten the 10 emails to all email
they
accounts.
They just need to black out the entire page and just put it in the middle. Apparently it's not enough.
They need to put a picture of Larry Page up at the top with, you know, an important message next
Page
to his
from Larry Page.
Yes.
Awesome. Yes.
Forget Linux on a thumb drive. How about a full Linux computer that is a thumb drive? FXI is bringing out the Cotton Candy, a tiny computer that is in a thumb-sized case with USB on one end for power, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth inside, and an HDMI connector for a monitor output. The device can run either Ubuntu or Android 4.0, has a dual-core 1.2 GHz ARM Cortex-A9 CPU, 1 GB of RAM, and a Mali 400MP GPU that allows it to decode HD video. It's going to cost $200, available for pre-order, and it's shipping in March.
Related story, Raspberry Pi is making an announcement. 600 GMT on Wednesday could be the release of the Raspberry Pi.
Another That's a $25 to $35.
Low-cost Linux computer news. Are you waiting for the cost of 3D printers to come down? Well, the Timex Sinclair of 3D printers may be arriving soon. MakeaBox is based on the open-source WrapWrap 3D printer that fits its printhead and motor inside a small sheet of paper-sized box. Of course, it's deeper than a sheet of paper. The MakeaBox kit will start at $350, and if you're lazy, you can buy it assembled for $550. The project is being built by Hong Kong hardware guy John Buford, who runs a hackerspace in China.
You know how when you go mobile, you don't have to read those stupid promoted tweets that Twitter's making money out of?
Yeah, that's the best.
Yeah, we can't do that anymore, sadly. What? Twitter announced today that promoted tweets and accounts will soon show up in your timeline and searches, at least when you're using the official Twitter client for iPhone or Android. Obviously, you have options there, but something to consider. Twitter says that you will be able to dismiss promoted tweets, and unlike the web client, promoted tweets won't always show up at the top of your timeline. If you don't like it, you could switch to a third-party app because promoted tweets aren't arriving there. They haven't figured that out yet.
On to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
So this has been kicking around for a couple of days. We figured it was about time we paid attention to it. A British man had shot a video about wild greens, like going out into the wild and finding edible greens, uploaded it to YouTube. Shortly after, he was informed that it was infringing on the copyrights of Rumblefish. Problem is, this video has no music in it. It's just him, like, looking at plants, but you hear some birds in the background.
Oh,
now, according
nice.
To Slashdot, the video creator contested the complaint. You know, he did a counter notice. Then YouTube came back and said that the clip had been reviewed by a person and still found to be infringing.
Agree.
And so they put ads. Now, they didn't take it down. They put ads on it, starting to make money off of all the people who wanted to see the plants. You probably heard it a little bit, but let's play it again. So you can hear this. This is what they said was a Rumblefish song, apparently.
Easy to digest.
There's some birds tweeting in the back. Does Rumblefish sound like that? No idea.
We could play some of their music and get a takedown.
That would grow.
We'll find out.
What bothers
that
me
kind of sounded like Guns N' Roses.
You know, the yeah,
that's Welcome to the Jungle, isn't it?
It's more GNR, absolutely. Bothers me is that it's not that it got ran into the robot notice. That's going to happen. You're going to have false positives, and especially with the number of videos being uploaded to YouTube, it's bound to happen. But the fact that they then claimed it had been reviewed and put ads on it.
Strange.
Yeah. That's
somebody's not
something didn't
working hard
right.
enough.
Yeah.
Or too hard, perhaps.
Let's check the calendar.
Let's do that, Tom. Actually, there's quite a bit happening this week. Microsoft is showcasing Windows 8 Consumer Preview at Mobile World Congress tomorrow, 6 a.m. Pacific time, if you want to be part of that or at least follow along. Also tomorrow, Demo Asia starts. It runs through the 2nd in Singapore. And Microsoft Flight comes out tomorrow as well. That's that online and free-to-play flight simulator. The Pirate Bay is going to remove most torrent files. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. This is because magnetic links are going to be taken over. That starts tomorrow as well. Moving on to Thursday, Verizon will start selling the Galaxy Tab 7.7 March 1st for $500. AT&T is going to start selling the Sony Tablet P dual screen tablet. That's hitting stores on March 4th. HBO Go is coming to the Xbox 360 on April 1st, which is very conveniently coinciding with the Game of Thrones Season 2 premiere. Well played, HBO Go. As for that report from yesterday that Intel was going to delay their Ivy Bridge launch until June, Intel has come back and says, quote, reports of an 8-week delay to the Ivy Bridge launch are inaccurate, and our schedule has only been impacted by a few weeks. That's spokesman John Carville speaking to CNET. We don't know how many weeks a few is, but apparently they think that means less than 8. And finally, I wanted to remind everybody, we talked about this at the beginning of February, that Chattanooga, Tennessee is sponsoring a summer program for students and entrepreneurs. Chattanooga's got gigabit per second network, which is screaming fast, and they want you for development, to give you money, provide access to mentors, free room and board, cash and prizes, all sorts of good stuff. You can participate by tagging people on Twitter, people that you think would be great for the project, with the hashtag GeekHunt. Hashtag GeekHunt. Or comment on the Facebook video that is linked at geekhunt.com. If your recommended person gets accepted and you're the first to tag him or her, you get $1,000. Application deadline is March 1st, so you only have a couple more days. Again, more at thegeekhunt.com.
Okay, a bunch of people in the chat room were pointing out that that we didn't make it clear that the video had been reinstated without the ads. I mean, it was never taken down, but the ads were removed. Rumblefish said it was a mistake. And in fact, the Next Web has an interview with Rumblefish CEO Paul Anthony. Rumblefish is a record label, my mistake in calling them a band. And he says that, you know, it was not reviewed thoroughly enough. The claim should not have been reinstated. It was clearly an oversight. So they're saying, hey, it was our mistake. But again, I think that just underlines the point that this system is broken, where you can go through and say, you know, this should not have been taken down. It was a bot mistake. And then a human can still go like, yeah, I don't care. Everybody says that. We're going to put it up. So somebody didn't review it thoroughly enough. But anyway, Rumblefish is copping to it. They're not trying to get out of it. They're saying, yeah, we made a mistake. Should have been reviewed better. On to incoming.
Incoming message.
Now we got some calls to 260-TNT-SHOW or emailed to tnt@twit.tv. And our first one is from Alex regarding the Note 10.1.
Hi, guys. This is Alex. You asked, where is the big point in the 10.1 Note? But you missed it. The 10.1 Note is the first Android device who can run multiple Windows at the same time, meaning you can watch a video stream in one window and can take notes in the other window or things like that. That's the big note point. Note it.
Okay, Alex is hilarious.
I want to thank Alex for that because I was looking at the Galaxy Notes and I was having trouble because I was looking at all the specs.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that either.
There was only a 1,000 specs and people mostly grousing about the lack of pen holder, which I also had an issue with. But I missed it. You're totally right. There are side by side. If you're watching a video or you're on a web page, you can write notes on your note.
Is that an ice cream sandwich thing?
I don't know.
I don't know if it's necessarily enabled because of ice cream sandwich. I haven't heard about it on any other ice cream sandwich.
I want to see this in action before I get too excited, but it sounds like something I want to get very excited about.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
All right. Thanks for that, Alex. Also, another caller with a thought about the two different Apple processors, the A5X and the A6 that we were talking about yesterday.
Hey, AT&T Kurt. This is Shorty from Florida. Just a thought. You guys the other day were talking about the two chip numbers for the Atom or the Apple processor. What if it was one for the GSM version they were testing and one for the LTE version they were testing? So the GSM would have been the 5, and then maybe the LTE would have been the 50 or whatever it was. Dude, love the show. Thanks very much.
That's interesting. I guess we'll find out next week. If we get an A6 next week, then yeah, that would make sense that they had a GSM and one with LTE built in. They needed two different processors, two different chipsets for it, possibly. It's intriguing. It's possible.
Good theory.
Probably one of the better theories I've heard.
Yeah.
Or they're just testing lots of processors.
They're always, that's for
that's
sure.
My boring
that's
theory.
A very safe theory, is that they're always testing lots of processors, which is absolutely true. All right, that's it for this edition of Tech News Today. Don't forget to go to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com. It's the place to go to submit stories that you'd like us to talk about and vote on the stories that are submitted and say, hey, you know what? I really like this story. I would like you to talk about it. Vote them up. Vote them down. There's all kinds of ways for you to participate in helping us pick what we talk about each day on Tech News Today. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or you can give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Dan Patterson joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then. We'll be right back.